Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes for another week. It's me, Naveen Razik. Alongside me, as always, it's Josh Carroll. We've got plenty to get through, plenty of action from the world of supercars and IndyCar. But first, we move to Formula One, where there's been some news about the engine, the regulations for next year, in particular, driver safety, and the revelation that the Halo, which has been the long-talked-about concept, which was tested several times over the last few years, has been scrapped immediately for this brand new device called the Shield, which nobody really knows much about. I mean, this has happened extraordinarily quickly. All we've got from the Shield is a couple of renders, but considering the amount of testing that's been done on the Halo, it's a real surprise to see the F1 commission ditch this so quickly, the strategy group. So, yeah, it's a real surprise, isn't it, Josh? And sort of, either it has to be really good, or they clearly have no idea what they're doing, which is not exactly where you want to be in terms of driver safety.
Yeah, for sure. And I personally think this is for the best. You know, just in the real world, the Halo just wouldn't work. Like, we've talked at length about this, you know, this year and the, well, not so much this year, but definitely last year, we talked at length about the Halo and how it would fare in previous serious incidents. And yeah, it just wouldn't work. So yeah, we've now got the Shield as the theme proposed for next year. We've only had a couple of renderings done. WTF1, they did their own impression on this year's Toro Rosso, and it did look pretty unappealing, to say the least. So, yeah, there is you know, the possibility of, you know, it being another eyesore, and that's not really what you want when everything else, you know, the whole purpose of these new regulations that came in this year was to make the cars look good, and you know, it would basically be ruined if the Shield certainly wasn't aesthetically pleasing. So yeah, like, it's a difficult scenario. Apparently the aero screen has been rejected as well. I think you know, the strategy group did, you know, basically select last week that the Shield is going to be tried to be put out by 2018. But yeah, I do think that, you know, that it's certainly doable for a 2018 debut in Melbourne. However, you know, they do need some in the flesh actual testing in front of the public eye. So hopefully that's done within the next few months. As I think all opinions will certainly be thrown about once we actually see it for itself.
Yeah, and that's going to be the big question. What exactly does it look like when it actually comes out, and how will that aesthetically play out? Because, of course, that's been the big focus at the moment.
Also, as well, you have to factor in how it will actually you know, impact the actual airflow over the bodywork of the car. That's another thing you have to keep in mind. And whether or not teams are... whether or not there'll be an actual loophole in the rules for teams to actually exploit it and help with the general airflow over the car, and also how it will affect the S-duct as well. Whether or not that will become extinct because of the new Shield coming in next year.
Yeah, and that's going to put an absolute haywire for any designer trying to get some preliminary stuff if we don't even know it's going to be in. That's because this is going to have a bigger impact, arguably, than the Halo on aero design, and that's going to be the real question to see how that comes out. We do have some other news about changes to the regulations. Shark fins and T-wings have been outlawed from 2018 onwards. Of course, they've controversially returned to Formula 1. Well, T-wings weren't necessarily really that old, but shark fins have last seen, of course, during the massive aero era from around 2006 to about 2010, but they've now both been given the sack as such. To be honest, I don't mind T-wings disappearing, but I don't mind good-looking shark fins. And there are a couple in the 2017 field, the Toro Rosso for one, and the Mercedes, when they were running their shark fin, which had a hole in it, was much better. But then if you look at some of the cardboard cutout ones, like the terrible one in the Force India, and the Red Bull, which wasn't really that great either, you sort of see why some fans are against it. Personally, I think if they were able to sort of aesthetically tune them up and make them look much nicer with the current dimensions of the car, I wouldn't mind some sticking around, but I can understand why they're going. And I guess as well, if you get rid of the shark the T-Wings, sort of the Shark Fins are the next logical step, and I guess if they're still focusing on trying to please the fans, then you've got to understand what the fans want, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, and like I think it's largely in part of the rear wing, being much wider and much shorter, because the shark fin and the T wing, they are basically, their height is basically based off how high the airbox of the F1 cars is, and the airbox height hasn't changed in quite a while, and it's certainly not going to change anytime soon. Like, it's in that perfect region, so that's why the shark fins are a bit out of place, because they're actually higher than the rear wing, as well as the T-wings. T-wings, I don't hate them, but I don't like them either. Like, they're just a bit sort of, they're there for a purpose, and like I understand that. Excuse me, and I understand that they're there for a reason. They're there to make the car go as fast as help the car go as fast as possible and create as much downforce as possible. But with a shark fin, I do like the idea of a shark fin. It does look, pretty. I personally do like the look of the good shark fins, like the cardboard cutout of the Force India's certainly a hit and miss. But realistically, the cars will look more simpler. And from 2018, so that'll be good for the fans just to have a more natural looking F1 car without all the aerodynamic extra bits on the bodywork to make it go faster. So that will please some, and it will be pretty beneficial just for the casual onlookers.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much sort of the push that the series has pretty much had since 2009 to sort of simplify and streamline things. Let's move on to some of the other stories. The other big one, the big rumor going around the paddock at the moment, is about Sauber and the future of their engine deal. They're currently being powered by a year-old Ferrari engine. They've had a deal with Ferrari since about 2010, but they sort of slipped to the third customer in that sort of deal, particularly with the close involvement between Ferrari and Haas. So they're now shopping around for the first time since the late 2000s when they were powered by BMWs. And it looks like they could possibly be closing on a deal with Honda to use their engines from next season, which, of course, throws all sorts of questions into the works, particularly concerning what's happening with McLaren. Have Sauber just shot themselves in the foot again? Will it be the last lifeline Honda gets in Formula One? That's the real question. There's a lot of questions that come out of these rumours. I mean, they are still rumours. We don't know. There's nothing been announced yet, but certainly it would be very much a last-gasp gamble for both Sauber and Honda pretty much to stay in the sport.
Absolutely. Like, Sauber would be Honda's last chance. Like, they would have almost double the resources as what they would have now in terms of, just development, in shop. It would largely depend on what this deal actually entails, like, what the cost is, where the money's going, whether the money is going from Honda to Sauber, or whether the money is going from Sauber to Honda, or whether there's just no money involved. It's just a free engine supplier. So I don't know, but like that, they've just had to do something with this. With the Ferrari relationship, because it's just not working for them. It'll really hurt them very much going into the second half of the season. And the only other alternative would be Mercedes. And I'd imagine they would have definitely, made an inquiry, with the Mercedes power unit being so fantastic in every way. But obviously that's not come to fruition, and that only leaves Honda. So it's not really the last chance for Sauber. Like, I can certainly see them surviving a post Honda relationship into the next decade. However, this will influence where exactly they're going to go in terms of the next few years and where their position is on the grid, because at the moment they look like they'll be the 10th best coming last for a long time to come, because the next team up from them is McLaren, and you can only think that things can only get better from McLaren. Like they couldn't possibly get any worse. As even though the engine is pretty terrible, the car itself is much more developed than the Sauber. So yeah, and so yes, Sauber, like that, I wouldn't say they haven't got really anything to lose, but you know, there's a lot to gain from this deal.
There's a little bit of irony in this as well, because of course when Mercedes entered the sport, they entered with Sauber. And then later on, they went on to join McLaren, and now it seems to be happening the other way around with Honda and McLaren. Of course, Honda is currently the manufacturer who supplies the least number of teams, which means that if Sauber end their deal with Ferrari prematurely and aren't able to find another buyer, Honda would be the team that is sort of obligated to supply them with an engine as part of the regulations. So they could try and force their hand that way, but I hardly think that would be the best terms to a working relationship for certain. So, this weekend we head off to the Sochi Autodrome, one of the more controversial tracks introduced in the calendar this in the last 5 years or so, partially because it's of its involvement with the Russian government, but also because it hasn't really produced that much in the way of interesting racing. It's very much got the worst of both worlds. It's got a temporary street course, which means it's terrible for overtaking, but it's also super wide, like a normal circuit with purpose-laid asphalt, which means it's still terrible for overtaking. The tyre degradation in the past has been particularly low. It will be even lower this year, considering the changes that have been made to the Pirelli tyre. It could really blow out to be an absolute snore of a race. But then again, the way that this season has gone, it's steadily improved, I guess, over the past few races. And China and Bahrain were surprises, I guess, in the quality of the racing. So you never know what could happen, Josh, in Russia.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, you know, Turn 3 will be an absolute spectacle this weekend with the car, with, you know, with this being, with the exception of Turn 1 at Shanghai, it's going to be the first time that these new generation cars go through a 180 degree corner. And Turn 4 will be fantastic as well, as well as Turn 7 and 8. In terms of the weekend itself, like, are they bringing the ultra-soft tyre?
I'm guessing they are. I'm just loading up the details from the Formula One website. They are bringing the three softest tyres, ultra-soft, super-soft, and soft. So that's going to be an interesting to see how it goes so far. Of course, 61% full throttle. That's the kind of lap this place is. 66 gear changes, an average lap speed of 220 kilometres an hour. So it sits somewhere in the middle. But it is, yeah, a very high full throttle track because there's a lot of really long sort of curving straights, so it'll be interesting to see how much they get out of it as well. Now, of course, the man to beat at Russia is, of course, Lewis Hamilton. He's had two wins at the venue. Sebastian Vettel hasn't really gone any better. They will be pushing, though, for front row start, and this is the other thing. Well, at least if we don't have much, we will at least have the fact that we could have another spectacular race. And the first race in Europe, so it's going to be interesting to see how Ferrari and Mercedes go, particularly in a circuit which is very much dominated by qualifying, Josh.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just the general feel of the race, it will most likely be a one-stop. I wouldn't be surprised if soft tyre just isn't touched this whole weekend, you know, only for this general setup on the Fridays. So, yeah, that just seems like the state of play at the moment. I think this will be just another weekend another great Mercedes triumph, because you know Ferrari, you know, that they've just had you know, there's a lot of rumours going around that they still can't compete with Mercedes in cooler conditions, and that is something that Russia will throw up and also as well just the Ferrari not being as good as the Mercedes on a track that is very, very green, which Sochi still is. with it only being used for F1 and the Russian Touring Car Championship when the Grand Prix is somewhere else around the world. So, yeah, it's going to be... I think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle for Ferrari this weekend. I think they just need a medal to just finish on the podium and just bag points and then just move on to Catalunya, which is a place you would think Ferrari would certainly have the edge. Realistically, Ferrari don't really need to be in front of Mercedes heading into the European season. Like, they can... I think... they'd be very confident in themselves if they're, like, within 20 to 30 points of them in the Constructors' title heading into this European season after this weekend.
Because, and it is much closer than that at the moment.
Yeah, because, like, I think everyone knows that on the classic European circuits, the Ferrari would be the better car, and, you know, they can continue on that momentum throughout the rest of the season where the series goes to Japan and then the Americas before finishing up in Abu Dhabi. So I think Ferrari right now are in a very fantastic position, and you know, all they need to do really this weekend to keep the pressure on Mercedes is, you know, basically just get Vettel on the podium. Like, they don't even really need to get Raikkonen on the podium. Also as well, speaking of Raikkonen, this is a real high-pressure weekend for him, as well as Bottas. As Raikkonen, he's constantly been struggling with understeer and front-end grip, and, you know, that's been at circuits with very high, to very high tyre temperatures and that have a lot of rubber on them, like Albert Park. You know, it's had a lot of Grand Prix now, over 20 years. Shanghai and Bahrain, they've both hosted endurance races and various other motoring categories throughout their existence. And now we go to a relatively still new circuit in southwestern Russia on the edge of the Caspian Sea. So, yeah, there could be, you know, a lot of, setup issues for Raikkonen. Also, another big weekend for Stroll with that unfortunate crash with Sainz. Another weekend where I think we could see exactly where Haas, Force India and Renault are, because I think they're all very, very close together.
And this is the run into the European season. Stroll actually isn't on the official championship points because he hasn't actually finished the race, so he hasn't been classified as a Formula One racer yet. Plenty of attention needed on him. Red Bull, of course, they're probably going to struggle. I guess it's a very high power track. Not the greatest for them at the moment. So yeah, Ferrari will be happy going into the European season. Two wins, two podium places. They'll still be up there at the front of the field. That's really where they need to be. So this race, of course, kicks off the re-standard European time of 10 p.m. in Australia, and it is on Network 10 because they like to get all the races that nobody else wants to watch. Let's move on now to a very action-packed weekend at the Phillip Island Super Sprint. Wow, there's a lot to unpack here, Josh. We will kick off, of course, with the Dunlop elephant in the room. What exactly was going on with the tyres over the weekend? It was an unbelievable circumstances we had. Race 5, 18 tyre failures affecting pretty much half the field. And if you didn't get a tyre failure, you got a penalty. So it all was absolutely insane. I mean, trying to watch that was unbelievable. If you didn't get a migraine watching that, good on you. I mean, the poor commentators, they clearly weren't keeping up with it. But yeah, an extraordinary weekend and something that the category doesn't need to see after the farce that was Race 3 in Simmons Plains. Where do we go from here, Josh?
Yeah, well, realistically, I'm sort of liking what they're doing right now, supercars. Like, they've sent the tyres from Phillip Island off to Dunlop HQ, so that does send a message to the head of Dunlop that, you know, supercars, you know, doesn't like it when this happens and that they want this fixed, as this particular tie won't be used until Bathurst. So if they screw up on the biggest stage, then that's the end of their contract, and realistically that just opens the door for any other tie manufacturer that wants to come in to Supercars. So yeah, pressure's on Dunlop just to fix the amount, just the ties. And I mean, you did message me. I think it was on the Saturday night. It was a Saturday night, the night of after race five, and you basically said that one of your friends who's racing in the Kumo touring car series, basically the Supercars third tier, he said that it was a load issue all weekend that was affecting both Kumo tyres and Dunlop tyres.
He said pretty much to me that he didn't think it was a setup issue because they were running within the parameters that Kumo had set before the weekend. And of course, the big change of this year is, of course, the new soft tyres, and in particular, the fact that they've lost a bit of they've thinned the sidewall a bit. So technically, they were sort of setting themselves up for load issues. And because we never tested Phillip Island, there's a good chance this was a freak. But yeah, it doesn't look really professional for the category. I mean, this is like Silverstone 2013, but even worse. And this has happened at one of the fastest circuits. We were very lucky that we didn't have another big crash like what happened to Craig Lowndes with practice. But yeah, an absolute farce. And if it wasn't the tyres going all out, then it was the penalties. I mean, that in itself is another kettle of fish. We've talked plenty of times about the supercars, stewards, cams, race control, and the shenanigans going on there, but this was another level. Basically, Scott McLaughlin was running up there along with a couple of other drivers who ended up finishing well down the order. But they ended up effectively coming into the pit, which is the narrowest pit in the supercars calendar, because it's designed for bikes, not for cars, so... you're going to end up with a very tight pit lane. They were sort of cutting across the inside of one of the unused pit boxes, and that was enough for supercars to give them a penalty, which is well within the rules. But they only gave it to Scott McLaughlin first, which meant that Ryan Story barged up to race control, had a chat, the replay came out, a whole lot of other cars were doing it. So they decided to penalise everyone, but not necessarily everyone they could see in the penalties. I mean, and that was just... made things even worse, I think, because you had no idea who was anywhere, and it just didn't feel like a race at all. It was just a sort of a survival of the fittest. If your tyre didn't go, you had a penalty. It was just unbelievable, and it doesn't look, make the supercars outfit look professional, which is something that they've been striving for over the last 25 years, Josh.
Absolutely, and let's not forget the hamburger cans, which are actually on the top of every single car, and it is mandatory in the rules for every car, you know, because of the television deal, to carry one, and they're always on throughout the race. So there's no reason why cams can't use those, as well as the Tiga cams that have been around for, I don't know, I think over 10 to 15 years now, in every single car, you know, which rests, you know, just near where the soft tire light is on the front left bottom of the windshield, I think it is these days. So yeah, there's that, and surely as well, you know, it wouldn't be that much of a fuss just to put, you know, I don't know, a 480 pixel camera right near where the speed trap is for the actual pit lane entry. And also as well, just I really like what they did in race six. You know, just put a cone there.
Do that, David Reynolds.
I was just about to say. You know, Betty's video just made it. It was video of the weekend from Betty. You know, just it highlights what we've always wanted to see from the Dave Reynolds Erebus deal, and it absolutely brought amazing, you know, fruition. Like, yeah, it was fantastic to see, and I really hope that that cone just stayed there and the supercars officials just gave the thumbs up and just left that cone there. I really, really want to believe that's what happened. But then again, cones have been, you know, used at pit lane entries and exits in basically almost every category around the world. Like, it doesn't really make sense when you have a rule that you want to enforce that you don't actually use an obstacle. Like, You know, they've done, you know, so many times before with tyre bundles. Like, why don't they use cones for the pit lane entry? And, like, you know, once a car knocks a cone, that they should, you know, not get a time penalty, but instead get a fine. Like, you know, crossing a simple, like, white line, you know, where a car has half a tyre width, where a car has half a tyre width outside of the fast lane on a tight pit entry, that's like, that's only basically a $1,500 fine. And that's what's been given to teams and drivers previously when they've done small safety errors in the pit lane. They've got a fine. And, like, realistically, like, there's no real problem logistically with cones. Like, you just stack one on top of the other. They only cover, like, you know, lesser tables width. And, you know, you can take them anywhere without any drama. And, like, you know, if a car does knock a cone over, like, someone can just run out and straighten it back up again. Like, it is basically, you know, one major, you know, stress-free solution. Like, it's there. Everyone can see it, you know, even the drivers. And, you know, realistically, that, like, you know, it's just... That's just how it goes. And also as well, there was some more issues with just the amount of pit bays that cars were allowed to go in. And, like, I agree that is a much more difficult kettle fish, but something that Hockenheim has in Germany in the actual pit lane is actual dotted lines, and I spoke to you about this, Naveen. It has dotted lines into each of the actual pit bays in the actual pit lane, and surely it wouldn't be that much of a hassle to do that to all 14 or 15 circuits that that Supercars go to just, you know, paint those lines into the actual pit bay. And, you know, that way it's much easier for drivers and pit crews alike because, you know, every team has a go on the pit wall. You know, that's just how the way things are. And, you know, they have their sign out to direct drivers to go into the correct pit bay. However, it can be difficult for those on the pit wall to know exactly where to hold the sign out so the driver knows where the correct position is to turn into the actual pit bay to actually, you know, get new tyres and fuel and to avoid a penalty. So having that line there, they would stand in exactly the right place. And, you know, these are professional drivers. They would turn in at exactly the same time and it will run like clockwork. So that's another solution that Supercars do need to consider. But, you know, having 15-second time penalty applied to any driver that crosses, you know, a line by half a tyre width is just outrageous. Like, it should be, you know, $1,500 fines because that's how it has been in the past, and there's just no real reason why that should change anytime soon.
I think the crux of it is that this is not a racing issue. You can't get an advantage by doing that in the pit lane. You can't because you'll lose it during the pit stops. I mean, I think Scott McLaughlin got something like that, but he ended up having to stack and that pushed him further back and the like. So yeah, it's not an advantage. You can't get anything out of it. And yeah, so because of that, it shouldn't really be a racing penalty. It isn't a performance advantage you're gaining. It should just be a protocol penalty. And that's where I think the fine will be better. And personally, I do think trying to sort out the pit lane situation is probably the more difficult thing because it does get messy. And you saw guys having to drive through the bay of the team behind them to get through their box. I think I saw that happen over the weekend. And yeah, that does look a little messy, which is why I think there needs to be some sort of solution there. And I think does the Supercars Commission need to figure out where the priorities go. So anyway, race 5, Fabian Coulthard taking his second back-to-back win with Penske. Jamie Whincup, a good result for him, his first real strong result of the season on the podium. And Garth Tander, a good result there for GRM Racing in the 33, coming up in third place, Van Gisbergen fourth. Good results for the Nissans, Michael Caruso and Todd Kelly, who's really looked a much better driver this year. I mean, he's come a leaps and spades from where he was last year. In sixth, Jason Bright surviving the chaos to get up to seventh. Winterbottom in eighth, Davison in ninth, and Scott McLaughlin in 10th place. Race 6, though, things were a little calmer. There were still some issues with tyres, but I think there were setup issues with all the 888 cars. It was a really bizarre one because the two top teams were nowhere, pretty much. I mean, Scott McLaughlin, the best place of the front runners in 14th position. Shane Van Gisbergen in 16th. Coulthard 17th. Winkup 18th. Yeah, a really bizarre race, but it did give us a brand new winner, and that man was, well, not a brand new winner, but a return to the top for a man who's been through a lot over the last 18 months, Chas Mostert, who pulled it together with a superb drive in the Super Cheap Auto Falcon. He's been on pole several times in the last year and a half or so, but hasn't been able to get the win. He's been seemed a completely different driver since Bathurst, but he's finally reignited some of that old form and taken a much-deserved win, Josh.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's a fantastic, you know, breakthrough for Chaz. Like, just before his Bathurst crash in 2015, everyone was touting him as a potential, as a very real championship contender. And unfortunately, because of that crash, you know, it's taken him two steps back. And, you know, it's really good for him to just finally break through, for that win. And Mark Wilmot to really get his season on track, because at Clipsall, you know, his form was terrible. Like, he just didn't have the speed. He was being outpaced very consistently by the much less experienced Cam Waters. Same thing happened at Simmons Plains. He was nowhere. And now, finally, at Phillip Island, he's finally got that podium. And, it was a fantastic weekend for him. Like, he'll take a lot of positives out of that weekend, and we head next to Barbagallo, and that's a circuit he's done pretty well at over the past few years. So Mark Winterbottom would certainly be full of confidence right now, and Dave Reynolds, a fantastic performance to get up into third place. And he was also touting, I think it was on Sunday night, you know, he was actually came out and said, you know, what might have been, you know, he actually believed that Erebus NCAR 9 would have actually been able to have gotten the win, which is, you know, incredible for Erebus, even though they certainly haven't been without a win. Like, they have got wins in the past. However, you know, it's always fantastic when the really small teams, you know, have the real genuine belief that they can really take it to the big top teams, you know, Red Bull and Penske.
Yeah, this is
And then come out with a win.
Yeah, this is sort of giving me flashbacks back to 2015. It's the old FPR podium, I think. Chas Mostert, Mark Winterbottom, and David Reynolds, the top three, effectively. That's a real flashback. James Moffat also getting another strong result for Wilson Security GRM. I think it's nice to see that these two teams, in fact, to switch to Holden at the last minute, they're getting the performance together, and I would like it to see if Erebus become the next Tecno in a way, and sort of are able to challenge for those top podium results. I think that'll be the best case scenario for them. So looking at the leaderboard, which is now a very interesting three races, Adelaide was fairly conventional, but the other two weekends were for anything but. Fabian Coulthard leads the points, even though he's got a 35-point penalty on him. Shane Van Gisbergen behind him, 561 points, 7 points behind. Then it's Chas Mostert, Jamie Winkup, Scott McLaughlin in fifth, rounding out the top five, which is pretty much all the drivers we were expecting, with the exception of Chas Mostert, who's now really sort of starting to solidify himself possibly as a championship contender. So I think it's really interesting the way things are going to play out. We've got Coulthard, who's, let's face it, wasn't the person who people had first as their championship leader. I think a lot of people were thinking that McLaughlin, who's simply had the better run of form over the last few years, will be the man in front, but he's now hit top gear. Van Gisbergen strong. Winkup still hasn't really reached his full potential, I think. He still hasn't managed to get on the top step of the podium like McLaughlin. I think once these two fire, then things are going to really get very interesting indeed.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a good point. Like, Winkup's, throughout this whole season, you know, he's just had something wrong. Like, you know, he hasn't actually had a full, complete package guys like Coulthard and McLaughlin and also Van Gisbergen have had. Like, there's always been something wrong. Like, you know, at Adelaide, you know, for whatever reason, you know, he just didn't find the right setup. Simmons Plains, he just didn't have the right speed at the right time. And then at Phillip Island, you know, he was sort of like, you know, in the background, just getting points. For him to only be, 37 points behind Coulthard at the moment, that's a fantastic, it shows why he's got six championships. So, Yeah, for sure. Like the his first win is imminent. Like, you know, it's gonna come. Like, it's just gonna happen. You know, when it does, like, you know, it'll be very interesting to see how guys like Penske respond. DJI Team Penske respond, as you know, when Wincup gets going, like when Wincup gets going and has a momentum behind him, he's really hard to stop. And like that, there will be a time where, sometime this year, you know, within the next few months, where he will get his first race win, and you know they will have to respond, and it'll be interesting. And I think in that moment, you know, if DJI Team Penske do respond, excuse me, if DJI Team Penske do respond, they're definite championship contenders. They're definitely right up there. They've definitely reached where they've wanted to be ever since the Penske deal happened. If they don't, then it's just another building year, and next year they definitely will be right up there, no question about it. So, yeah, very exciting times ahead. Barbagallo, the next event coming up. Thank you very much. Barbagallo coming up next. Which is a very high tyre degradation circuit, so we will see quite a lot of strategy coming up. It was the scene of Ludo's fantastic strategy call for Craig Lowndes last year. So, yeah, you know, it really sets up for what is going to be a very exciting weekend next weekend. And, like, the load issues, they shouldn't really be there. Like, yes, Barbagallo's got high tyre degradation, but really it only has, you know, one real long turn. And, you know, realistically, I don't think I've ever seen a tyre issue. I think the last time I saw a tyre issue at Barbagallo was Dave Reynolds when he was on track for a podium. I think it was in 2008 or 2009 when he just stretched those super soft tyres, when he just stretched those soft tyres just too far, to try and get that podium for what was then known as Kelly Racing. So, yeah, you know, there's everything to play for, and yeah, this championship could really heat up really, really fast.
Yes. Now, before we go, this last news story is an interesting one. Coming out of 888 Race Engineering, who have started a push for paddle shift gearboxes. Of course, supercars currently use a sequential shifter. It's a physical one. It's just located in the mid, just to the left of the driver. However, they're pushing for the paddle shift, which is currently used. Well, there are paddles on the gear on the actual car, but they're actually used for team radio, not necessarily for shifting at all. And are thinking of doing something similar to the setup they have with GT cars or Formula One cars, under the grounds of safety, particularly because we've had a couple of big injuries, particularly Chas Mostert's crash in 2015, where he did suffer a broken femur as a result of smashing that gear stick. Because, of course, when you are driving with a sequential shifter, you've got your hand on the shifter a lot of the time. So, whilst I do understand the safety concerns, I'm not necessarily... I think it might be a step too far for touring cars, because this is sort of a very unique formula. And I think losing the sequential shift, which is really one of the most iconic parts of the sport in many ways. I mean, back in the old days when they had a H-shifter, you got this incredible sound. And of course, people have great memories of things like Greg Murphy's lap, where you see him shifting and working away at Bathurst. It's part of the magic, Josh. And I think part of the magic will be lost a little bit if we go for the paddle shift setup.
Yeah, for sure, and like just as you said, I think it was someone from America, you know, posted a comment on Facebook saying, you know, like, this is why this series is so unique, and this is why this series gets, you know, quite a considerable amount of international attention these days, is because it's so unique, and also as well, like, if they do get rid of the sequential gear stick, then, you know, under safety grounds, then wouldn't the anti-roll bar adjustments, the two levers, you know, that are not as tall as the actual gear stick, but, you know, they're basically in the almost exactly the same spot, would they want to get rid of those as well? Because they would fit under the same category, and that would really take away from the mid-race adjustments, which, you know, would take away from the racing. So, on those grounds, when you actually keep in mind that The anti-roll bar adjustments are right where the gear stick is, and you know they would actually cause the same problems. You know that is being proposed by Triple Eight. The exact same safety issues being put forward by Red Bull. Then you know it sort of you know defeats the purpose because like you know the anti-roll bar adjustments they're not going to go anywhere anytime soon. Like. You know, it's fantastic. You know, it's good for racing when the drivers you know have the ability to change the anti roll bar and you know just make sure they don't you know understeer into oblivion. So yeah, and also as well, I think you know right now we're reaching the safety peak. You know, peak safety, if you will, where you know we've really just refined it, the actual product of the safety of a supercar. You know, we've got rid of the rear mount fuel tanks. The actual driver's seat is on the actual driver's roll cage under Car of the Future. The windscreen is much stronger, which means, you know, incidents like Craig Lowndes, a tyre going into Craig Lowndes' windshield at Bathurst in 2005 won't happen ever again. It will just simply bounce off. The actual strength of the roll cage and the way that part the actual panels on the car are designed, you know, that just shreds off nice and easily. The hands device that comes that rests on the driver's shoulders and the actual strength of the helmet itself, the collapsible steering arm that also came under the Car of the Future. Like we've reached the point where you know, it's just leg protection, and the leg protection issue will be solved with the new leg protection being coming in by Sandner, which will be mandatory across all cars, both wild cards and permanent full-time entries. So right now, I think we've reached safety peak. Like, there's just no real way for the drivers to get safer. Like, yes, there will be these ideas, and you know, once a product is maxed, you know, in terms of like how good a series can be, like if a series has reached its maximum racing product potential, like the racing is as good as it could ever be, then these radical ideas come out. So right now, I think Supercars has reached safety peak, and that's an enormous achievement. However, these you know very out there, unpractical, and you know just unlogical ideas will come into play, and realistically, you know, it would be more so the roll cage itself that and just the sheer brute force of the impact that caused Chaz Mostert's leg injuries, not the actual gear stick itself, because it's you know just a bit of a different part of the car, and it's more towards it's more towards the actual hip area of the actual driver itself. So right now, you know, we have reached safety peak in supercars, and unless there's an actual genuine reason why, then you know, if there's an actual good chance of the actual gear stick and the anti-roll bars adjusters, you know, causing more leg injuries to supercars drivers, then they should just actually move them, or you know, just put like you know some sort of foam barrier in the way of the actual gear stick for the actual legs themselves, because the actual hands and the body itself. Well, the upper body from the hip up will be, you know, will certainly not come into contact with the actual gear stick itself. So, if there's a reason, then just move those pieces of equipment. You know, just try and move them out of the way of where the leg may go. And you know, if that's you know sort of unfeasible, then just put some. You know, nice comfy foam that will absorb the impact of the driver's legs movement and just prevent injury. So they're my thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. A lot of categories like Formula One are talking about. We sort of had this big push for safety over the last 40 years, but there comes a point when there is a peak, and I think we're sort of reaching that with Formula One. I say they are this, and touring cars, most sports, I think. it's the safest it's been in terms of what's been happening at the circuit and in the car. I think probably there could be a couple more avenues of sort of upgrading some of the circuits and some of the safety features. Of course, there's some places where it will never happen, like Bathurst. I mean, but we do accept that Chas Mostert's crash was a freak. And we've seen certainly huge crashes there, like, of course, Fabian Coulthard's famous roll where he emerged virtually unscathed. And, of course, if anything, maybe at Darwin, where we saw Lee Holdsworth come up against a concrete barrier, that would be something that could be fixed by perhaps getting some tyres in there and like some safety upgrades that can go on the circuit. But yeah, I think there is a point where you have to say you've done all you can with this generation of car, and we do. And until we decide what supercars does next, I don't think there's going to be any real avenues for change, to be honest. So moving on to the United States, and it seemed that Australians getting tyre failures is a bit of a trend. Will Power, who led 60 of the 90 laps of the Barber Motorsports Park Grand Prix in the IndyCar Series, two-thirds effectively. His IndyCarma continued to use the best word to describe it. For the fifth race in a row, he was taken out by some sort of bad luck. In this case, a slow puncture on his rear tyre, which means he had to pit, and resulted in Joseph Newgarden taking his first win with this new Penske, his first win with Penske since he joined the team at the beginning of the year. This guy can't get a break, Will Power. Last five races, if he's not been taken out by Charlie Kimball, he's had some sort of mechanical issue. And this just really shows just the bad luck he always has. But the good thing about Will Power is that he will always fight his way back out of it.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, ever since Will Power won the title a few years ago, you know, he's always had these terrible starts to a season that have almost always never really been in his control. Just more bad luck for Will Power. Like, Will Power is just one of those drivers that always gets bad luck compared to his competitors. It's really hurting him in the Drivers' Championship. Like, he's some way back behind Simon Pagenaud right now. It's going to take another big push for him to get back into the championship race. Thankfully for him, we do have 17 races, I think, in IndyCar this year. So there's a lot of points for him to get back, but he will need to turn around pretty soon, unfortunately. So yeah, it really is just bad luck. On the other side of the garage, Joseph Newgarden finally gained that breakthrough win that we were all expecting with Penske, and you know, this could be the time when, you know, Newgarden really puts the hammer down and, you know, really does come into his competitive own. Like, the ovals are coming up, and Iowa is, you know, later in the year, and you know, that was the scene where he almost slapped the entire field last year. Imagine what he's going to do in a Penske Chevrolet. So
with a perfect hand as well. Last year he had a broken hand for all that.
Yeah. So yeah, Joseph Newgarden, you know, he could become James Wincup's scary good. So that's just something to keep an eye on. And you know, somehow Sebastian Bourdais with Dale Coyne, you know, still up there, still leading the way by 6 points over Scott Dixon, who is once again just up there. Like, Scott Dixon, you know, no matter, like, even though, you know, Chip Ganassi, you know, it's been cut back, and you know, it's not really, and you know, now they're with Honda, and you know, everyone thought, oh, they're not going to be as competitive, and it's going to be a Penske walkover. He's currently second in the championship with a real good shot to get yet another IndyCar title. So It's just amazing the way this season goes has gone so far. And you know, it was, you know, another really good IndyCar race, and the best part is that Naveen, I showed the article to you this morning, that Motorsport.com revealed this morning that that there was a significant jump in the actual TV ratings for this race, which is only good news for IndyCar, and everything they're doing is working. So yeah, IndyCar is only going to get bigger, and it's going to be even if it's just a Newgarden runaway, it's going to be a fantastic season, and you know, it's going to be fantastic for IndyCar in America to have an American driver just, really, giving the rest of the field, including internationals, an absolute masterclass.
Yes, it's certainly going to be exciting. This is the month coming up where it all kicks off. Of course, we have the Phoenix next, and then, of course, it's all the action at Indy. This race did show, if anything, though, that Chevrolet are still not to be counted out. It was a very dominant performance from the Penske's. They had, until Will Power had was taken out, they had four cars in the top five for most of that race. Joseph Newgarden working his way up through the field past his competitors to get a hard-fought win. Simon Pagenaud on the podium. Helio Castroneves still fighting strong. And, of course, Alexander Rossi staking his claim in fifth position. So, if anything, it shows that there will still be some competition, at least on the road course side, from the Chevrolet. And that's only good for the sport. And, of course, next up, we've got an oval. You never know what will happen there. Of course, with that ratings, part of that will, of course, be the NASCAR is not on effect because, of course, NASCAR was delayed, and we'll talk about that a little later thanks to some rain at Bristol Raceway. So there'll be plenty of people watching, and also people who are Formula One fans in the United States tuning into the possibly IndyCar race for the first time to see Fernando Alonso, who was milling around, and as well, he was in the commentary box having a chat with Lee Diffie, Townsend Bell, and Paul Tracy from NBC Sports Network. So he's certainly making his way around, getting to grips, and he looks to be really excited and pumped. And it looks like he's got a brand new lease on life, that Fernando Alonso. So yeah, another great IndyCar weekend. They're doing everything they need. And with next year, it looks like it's only going to get better, to be honest. Now, let's of course move on to all the action coming in the world of NASCAR. We'll talk about IndyCar first. They head to Phoenix, which is the first oval, and also one of those unique ovals that you see on IndyCar. Every oval is unique, and none more so than Phoenix, with its iconic dog leg. It's very fast. They're not running the full super speedway setup on it because it's such a short oval. So we still don't really know exactly where we'll put people in terms of the 500, but it will be a good indicator to see where people are in terms of their road racing skills. Sorry, not their road racing, their oval racing skills, which is something that a lot of the guys wouldn't have had much in the way of practice of over these last few rounds. So it will be very much the perfect curtain raiser for all the action that comes later in May in Indy.
Yeah, for sure. And realistically, with it being the first competitive oval race of the year, no one really knows what the pecking order is. In preseason testing at Phoenix, it was Joseph Newgarden and Penske taking top spot earlier in the year, but we just don't know with testing, whether or not Honda teams were sandbagging. We just don't know. So yeah, it's gonna be a good weekend for sure. Like, no one really knows what's gonna happen. Realistically, if Sebastian Bourdais and Dale Coyne Racing can get another solid result here, get another good top five finish, then they're not pretenders anymore. They're right there. So, yeah, I never thought I would say that Dale Coyne are championship contenders, but if they do really well at Phoenix, like, there's no reason to really count them out. Like, they're genuinely in there.
Yes. So, moving on to NASCAR, and there is really only one story we can talk about, Josh. The Craig Lowndes of American Auto Racing, Dale Earnhardt Jr., has announced that he will retire from the Cup Series at the end of this year. The veteran driver who turns 43 in his 18th season made a 600th career start later in March. He missed most of the second half of last season after he was recovering from concussion syndromes, and he will compete in his final race at Homestead Miami Speedway later this year. This is huge, not necessarily unexpected. He is a veteran, and the way he sort of just fell out of the competition last year because of that unfortunate concussion really didn't exactly do any favors to him. But he is the most popular driver by a mile. He is one of the big reasons people go to take Tony and go to race. And it's going to be a real shame that he's going to finish his career without a Cup Series.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just what can you say? This is, the real genuine changing of the guard. Like, it's been talked about quite a lot over the past 12 months, with the emergence and arrival of guys like Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott. And now this just confirms that the changing of the guard is underway. And yeah, it's the end of an era. In terms of the future for Dale Earnhardt Jr., realistically, he has said that he will be sticking around the world of NASCAR. He's also contracted to his own team in the Xfinity Series for two races in 2018. What those two races are, we don't know. However, don't be surprised if they are two Super Speedway races, because they are his bread and butter. It's going to be very, very difficult to get your head around that Dale Earnhardt Jr. is not racing in the Daytona 500 next year. He will certainly be around and certainly be on pit row somewhere. It's going to be really, for him to actually not be racing, it's going to be a really, it's going to take a big adjustment for sure. And, however, this doesn't mean that there won't be an Earnhardt in the race with Jeffrey Earnhardt, the third generation Earnhardt, racing around at the moment. He did make his Daytona 500 debut this year, even though he did retire midway through the race. So there will still be an Earnhardt in the 500. Like, the last time there wasn't an Earnhardt in the 500 was back in 1978. So it's been an amazing streak with over 30 Daytona 500s this year. So it most likely will go to 31, and who knows how long it will go for in terms of the career of Jeffrey Earnhardt. So, yeah, but it's going to be a real big loss for NASCAR. Like, no matter how positive you are, like, there will certainly, you know, just be a drop. There'll just be a hole because Dale Jr.'s departure. So, yeah, it really is just the changing of the guard, and it's just not going to be the same with Adam Racing.
Yeah, we've had three major retirements over the last few years. Jeff Gordon hung up the boots in 2015, Tony Stewart last year, now Dale Earnhardt Jr. It is really a time of change in the NASCAR paddock. There's, of course, a good chance, though, that he'll still stick around, and there's a good chance he'll end up in a broadcast booth somewhere. I guess NBC and Fox will be chomping at the bit to get him to sign a contract for next year, and that wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened. That said, another long runner, the J.D. Winker of the NASCAR series, and Jimmy Johnson, has kept his strong streak, his revival going. He went back-to-back in Bristol, taking his second win on the Monday after rain saw the Sunday race cancelled. Another close, tight circuit race. Plenty of action. And yeah, it's just Jimmy Johnson going from strength to strength. And this is the guy who just keeps on giving.
Yeah, for sure. And like, it was just another Jimmy Johnson win. Like, he got to the front, he stayed there, and just won the race without any drama. And that's just what Jimmy Johnson does. So, another really good win for him. And yeah, it's actually pretty surprising that he hasn't been talked that much about the actual about being an actual championship contender. But that may be because the new stage rule is just throwing that championship contender talk just all out of whack. But now, it's certainly we have to now consider Jimmy Johnson as a championship contender. The series now heads to Richmond, another short track this weekend. And he's there. He's won two races in a row now, and in any given season, you just don't discount him. So right now, Kyle Larson once again leads the championship by 27 points, once again over Chase Elliott. In third is once again Martin Truex Jr. That top three hasn't changed that much over the past month or so. So yeah, right now it's it's still difficult to imagine who's going to be in the chase, because right now you've got guys like Eric Jones, who's in 12th place right now. So, and it'll be pretty amazing to see him in the chase. It's still a long way to go to the chase, and it's still very difficult to even try and predict who's going to make it into the chase. So, yeah, you know, it'll become more and more clear over the next few races. However, you know, there's still a long, long way to go. So, anything can still happen. And the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Championship is still very much.